for Population Services International, for anyone who's unfamiliar with the organization. And we have programs in more than 60 countries. This is one of our examples of an injecting drug use intervention that we did. So first of all, we did two rounds of tracking studies, and we wanted to just get a sense of some baseline levels of IDs, knowledge, attitudes, and risk behaviors with regards to HIV/AIDS. We also wanted to identify determinants of unsafe behavior, namely sharing needles and syringes. At PSI, we categorize these different determinants according to behavioral theory and their opportunity, ability, and motivational determinants. The third one is to monitor the changes in determinants and behavior over time, and then to evaluate our program effectiveness in changing behavior and those determinants. So we conducted a baseline survey in August of 2004, and then a follow-up study 18 months later in February of 2006. We had three study sites, and forgive my pronunciation, but Kunming, Taiwan, and Yingjiang. We conducted interviews in government detoxification centers, and the reason for this is because at any one time, a very high proportion of IDUs in China are incarcerated, somewhere between 75 and 80%. So recruiting them out in the community proves very challenging. So we randomly sampled those who were 16 years or older and had been in detox for 3 months or less. And the reason we did that is because we needed to know about their injecting behavior in the month prior to incarceration. We used multivariate analysis to identify the determinants of unsafe behavior. And then we used Unionovas to compare the findings across the study years to monitor those changes and then also to evaluate our program. So the program in Yunnan is based on two communication channels. The first one is peer education within the detox centers. The second is our one drop-in center in Kunming, with a focus on HIV prevention knowledge and also preventing injecting-related health risks. We use things like flip charts, games, and large group activities. And the length of the intervention evaluated in this study was 18 months. So the two study samples actually differed significantly across time, and there are a couple of reasons we think for this. So there are five factors here, four of which we think are because the baseline data were collected in another city where we didn't end up doing an intervention, so it wasn't included in the follow-up. And in the baseline, Ruili was included, and that's a border area which tends to have more males, minority populations with a lower income, a lower educational level. And then the other factor was age. And we think because there's been a general decrease in the number of new and young injectors, it just makes it more difficult to randomly sample them in these detoxification centers. Okay, the team, in order to measure exposure to the program, they created this point allocation system where no exposure is 0 points, low exposure is 1 to 8, and high exposure is 9 or more. And you can see that the low exposure is actually fairly intensive. And we had to do that because we had hypothesized that exposure would be something else, but when we actually got the data, exposure, so many people had been exposed, we had to reevaluate how we categorized them. But in order to be in the high exposure group, you had to have attended a peer education session or had fairly intensive exposure to the drop-in center. And what happens in a drop-in center on the first visit for a new member is they're assigned an escort who takes them around and they tour the facility. They also do risk assessment with the escort. They have at least one organized activity each week, which is led by a member of the drop-in center. They have resource materials and condoms available, and they also have special outings and family days. Okay, so in terms of change over time, over this 18-month period, we actually have three negative effects, or three negative trends, and three positive trends. So the negative trends are, well, there is no change in terms of that needle and syringe sharing behavior, but a negative trend in sharing works. The other negative trend is the attitude about believing it's important to know your HIV status. The positive trends were the perceived received availability to obtain clean and new needles and syringes when needed. Knowing a person can be infected with HIV even if you just share once, and the increase in personal susceptibility to HIV. So what we wanted to do was tease out what could be attributed to exposure to our programming. And what we found was sort of a mixed bag. The first one was, it looked like a negative effect, where people who were highly exposed to our program were more likely to share works. So that's a bit of a concern. And what we think happens is that we emphasize the needle and sharing message too much, and by not talking about sharing work works, that people might have just assumed it was safe by not talking about it. The next one was no effect on the perceived availability of new needles and syringes in the community. It started out so high at baseline at almost 93% that it's actually not surprising that we didn't show positive effect. We also might not have measured the right sort of effect, maybe just seeing them in a pharmacy or some other sort of exposure that just we didn't include. But we did have a positive effect on knowledge, knowing that a person can become infected even by sharing just once, and that would make sense given the format of our peer education sessions and the drop-in center information. At the second round, we prefer to do this sort of segmentation analysis in the first round of data collection, but our measures weren't good enough in the first round to identify those determinants of not sharing needles, so we were able to do it in the second round, and this will affect how we improve or strengthen our program in the future. And so what we know from this is that among those who never shared in the month prior to being incarcerated, they had a better social norm, group norm, for not sharing needles and syringes. They also were more likely than non-sharers to know that burning is insufficient to clean a needle. They showed a greater likelihood of never sharing and intention not to share. That's on a 4-point scale. They usually keep their own new needle and syringe on reserve so that they would have something in case pharmacies were closed when they were ready to inject. And they were less likely to have shared other works. The people who shared actually were more likely to report knowing somebody who's infected with HIV, which makes sense. And what's reported here, you're used to seeing odds ratios like in the last presentation. These are actually adjusted proportions. This is for that scale of intention not to share. Even if my drug hunger is very strong, I will not borrow someone's needle and syringe. I'm more likely to share when pharmacies are closed, and I'm more likely to share when money is tight. So what we learned from this was that we need to improve knowledge around effective cleaning techniques. The idea is that burning a syringe or needle, the needle, isn't sufficient to clean. We also need to promote a plan ahead message where people keep needles and syringes on reserve for themselves or their friends. Promote better and safer social norms to encourage friends not to share. And to place more emphasis on avoiding sharing works, not just needles and syringes. And this is the last slide. This is actually just a photo of a peer education session taking place in a detox center. This is with male inmates, all of the male